And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink, who is exceptionally early today. What was wrong, Patty?
No clue.
Did you wake up early?
Just happened. Hey.
Did you get up on the right side of the bed?
She was just excited that I'm here.
I'm very excited that you're here, Julie.
Our guest is Julie Johnson. Julie is running for the Texas Legislature. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you so much. It's a thrill to be here.
That's not something we hear often, is it?
Well, we're thrilled to have you.
We are. You are running for what district?
House District 115.
Which is Northwest Dallas County. What's included in your district?
It is Farmers Branch, Carrollton, Capel, Valley Ranch, and a little bit of Irving.
And not all of Carrollton, just the Dallas part of Carrollton.
Correct, right. The district on the northern boundary is the Dallas County line.
Okay, so you're just in Dallas County, a little piece of Dallas,
one precinct.
Dallas, right. And you go into Irving all the way to the airport.
Correct.
Okay. So what's the big issue in your district?
Public education. Our district, the people of House District 115, are very, very upset at the current representative, Matt Rinaldi, and his stance on public education. He takes the positions to support vouchers, which is a defunding mechanism of public schools. And we have strong public schools, mm-hmm. The Carrollton Farmers Branch School District and the Capel School District are fantastic.
Two of the better school districts in the state.
Of our community mm-hmm. Value those schools. Our kids go to schools there. They are a bedrock of the community, and they are very upset that the current representative, Rinaldi, does not support their efforts.
And, you know, what's interesting to me is I think Capel Independent School District has produced maybe for the last 10 years like the massive numbers in the top 10 of the Scripps Spelling Bee, the National Spelling Bee. I mean, these kids are amazing, mm-hmm. and they're coming out of public schools in Capel.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's striking to me how talented these kids are. We're blown away when we watch it every year.
So, right, Patty and Julie, you're saying good schools can produce smart kids or kids that are going to go on to college?
You know, in my opinion, a strong public education system is the foundation for a strong society. Mm-hmm. When we have a strong public school system with excellent teachers that are well paid, mm-hmm. that have a great curriculum for all of our kids, not just the select kids, but every child, then we educate them to be independent. We educate them to be smart, thinking, productive people. We educate them so that when they graduate, that they can be entrepreneurs, they can form businesses, they can be great employees, they can contribute to our society. A strong public education system is also the single draw for good business. Businesses come into our community because we have good hiring pools. We have people that can hire. Amazon's a classic example of that.
Yep. Do you know how many times I've been asked, well, you're gay, you don't have kids, why do you care about education? Why do you care about, shouldn't you not pay school taxes or not want to pay school taxes? And my answer to that is no. I've been in a position where I've hired people. I want them to be able to read and write.
Well, that's right.
Well,
and also, I would say a lot of gay people have kids, too.
What do they do?
Start with that. So
including you.
And Laron has a daughter. Of course we have kids.
Yeah, but we're everywhere.
But it's one of those things, well, you know, why do you care, talking about me personally? Because I want people around me to be educated.
Well, the problem with politics when you are self-focused mm-hmm. is, you may not need something at this moment, but you will need it down the road. Or we have the collective good. We have a national security, national defense. Our military benefits us all. You know, we may not be in it. We may not have family members in it. But that doesn't mean we don't support it, because
absolutely.
We all benefit. Infrastructure benefits all of us. Mm-hmm. We need good water. And, that might originate in one part of the state, but it ends up somewhere else. It benefits everyone to have a healthy infrastructure. Education is the same thing. It is the common benefit that benefits all of us in society when we have an educated people.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the vouchers for a second, if we could. For a lot of people, because it's been in the news a lot, could you talk about a little bit what vouchers are?
Vouchers are, it's like a coupon that you can say, you know what, I don't like this particular public school, and I want to take this coupon and then go give it to a private school and get a credit on my tuition. And that the public school system pays for. And the problem with that is multiple levels. But one, obviously, it takes money away from public education. And two, it also takes the public oversight away from public funds. We elect our school boards. We have public officials who are accountable to the voters and who are accountable to state laws in terms of the employment of those funds and how they're used and how they're spent and the accountability of that. When we redirect that into private facilities, that accountability and that oversight is removed, which is not the intended of public funds. People can certainly pay to go to private school if they want to, but it should be at their own expense, not at the public's expense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because schools, public schools, they get paid for every single child. And the more children they lose, and we see this happening in some Dallas schools, you know, you run the risk of that school being shut down.
Right. You know, the funding is very, very important. And it's one of the problems that we have. And, you know, my opponent, Matt Rinaldi, voted against the education funding bill. And that's another big problem that the community in my district has with him, is that he doesn't support the funding of public education so that we can have strong, healthy, thriving schools for all of our kids.
In fact, he voted against a number of things. Like, he voted against reducing the teacher ratios for students with disabilities.
Yes.
So he wanted kids with special needs to be in bigger classes.
Right.
Cheaper to educate them that way, not that they're going to get educated.
Right, and he voted against dyslexia training, for example. And mm-hmm. that's screening, and that's and she's just personal to me. My son has dyslexia, and I'm so grateful that his third grade teacher spotted that and encouraged us to have him tested. And then we were able to provide the educational resources he needed to be able to conquer that, the tools he needed to be successful within dyslexia, because mm-hmm. it can be so profound. And now he's thriving and succeeding. He's getting ready to graduate from high school, and he's doing great. But because his teacher helped identify that.
Do you know, I'm dyslexic, and we didn't know what dyslexia was when I was in elementary school. But my teacher did catch that I was not reading across a line, that I was reading up and down and to the next line and back up to this line and flipping words. And I can still read backwards as easily as I can read forwards. But one of the things she showed me was, here, use a bookmark and it'll keep you your eye on the line. And this is before we knew what dyslexia was, but she'd had other students who did this before, and I learned not to do that. And dyslexia is one of those things that you're either not going to read or you're going to learn to overcome it. And what I tell anybody who says, oh, well, I'm dyslexic, I say, well, get over it. Learn to not do that. And you can. Of course, I'm very sympathetic. But you can learn to not do those things. But it takes a good teacher to teach you to,
absolutely,
you know, what to do. He also wanted to defund financing for special needs students.
Right. You know, there were a number of bills and opportunities in this past legislative cycle that he voted against with relating to access to quality education for special needs kids and families, but quite frankly, all families, you know, across the board.
Isn't this just a good investment? When you have a special needs kid and he gets a good education, he can grow up to be, he or she can grow up to be self-sufficient. Isn't that better than having a special needs kid who isn't?
Well, of course, but I don't want to just limit it to special needs kids, because it's the truth for all children.
Sure.
You know, we have, as a society, have an obligation to educate all of our kids, so that they can grow up to be the best selves that they can be. Mm-hmm. And we have to empower them with knowledge and education. And we can look to other parts of the world that do not educate their population and see the problems associated with that. We are the wealthiest nation in the world, and we should have the best education system in the world, and we don't. And that there's a problem with that. In Texas, in particular, I'm a proud Texan, and I am so mad that Texas is 48 out of 50 in terms of state rankings, in terms of our educated students. We are number one in one category, however, the amount of students that do not actually graduate. Texas is 50th out of 50th.
That's pathetic.
In high school graduation rates. And so I would say that the Republicans that have been in office, they're not doing their job. They're spending billions of dollars on education, and they're getting terrible returns. College football coaches are fired when they get returns like this. Why are we not firing our people that are administrating our educational funding because they're not giving the schools the resources they need to succeed?
Well, maybe Matt Rinaldi's solution is to fire the students who aren't doing well with going through school in large classes.
I think the solution is to fire Matt Rinaldi.
Now, if that name is familiar, though, he wrote the bathroom bill, or yes, one of the bathroom bills that went through. What kind of a waste of money and time and effort and energy was that? You know, we're talking about education. Education funding was never really solved in this legislature, was it?
No, they did like a mini Band-Aid. They approved about, what, $300 million as opposed to the $1.8 billion that was deemed necessary. So they clearly didn't put the resources that were necessary to bring the Texas education levels, funding levels, up to where they at least were requested to be. And it chose instead to spend millions and millions of dollars in energy and pursuing a bathroom bill to regulate, where people went to the bathroom in a discriminatory and hateful way. And that's just an example of how the priorities of our current leaders, Dan Patrick, Matt Rinaldi, Greg Abbott, are so far out of line with what needs to happen to regulate and govern our state in a responsible and compassionate way.
You know, I went to a forum a few nights ago with a great candidate for Senate District 2, Kendall Scudder, and it was an education. The topic was 100% education for 2 hours, and Bob Hall was there, who's the incumbent state senator in District 2, and Cindy Burkett, who's was a House rep, and now she's running in for that seat as well. So two Republicans and one Democrat talking. And for 2 hours, they talked about what was priority, what was important for the students throughout the state of Texas and for, you know, families and such. And not once did they mention the safety of anybody in the bathroom. They didn't mention the need for a bathroom bill. They talked for 2 hours on education, and it never came up. But it was a priority just a few months ago.
They spend more time on that than anything else in this legislature.
They couldn't manage to pass a decent education funding bill, and yet, you know, we spent all this time on the bathroom bill, and yet a few months later, it's not even mentioned. It's not even not a low priority. It's not even on the radar.
It's not on there at all.
I thought it was fascinating.
Well, you know, with an education bill, to paraphrase our president, who knew education funding was difficult?
Was so complicated.
It's so complicated, yeah. who knew? And they might have to spend some time on it. It's easier just to vote. Okay, we'll vote $350 billion. Billion? Million? Million.
Million.
Million. Yeah, not billion. $350 million for it. We'll just throw the money out there and that'll do it. Because I don't think that bill was even very specific, was it? I think it was just general funding to shore up budgets at school districts across the state.
It was not the desired bill that everybody had on the table and were excited to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They did not pass that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting too that this guy is out allegedly representing this district, and from what I've heard, you don't see him much. Have you seen him?
Rinaldi?
Mm-hmm.
No, I have not seen him.
People I talk to who live in out in the district, they said, I don't even know what he looks like. Mm-hmm. I couldn't spot him if I saw him.
Right. You know?
Yeah, he doesn't spend a lot of time in the district all that much. And so, you know, at least everywhere I've been, I've not seen him. And I've asked people about him, and they haven't seen him either. So maybe he's hiding. I don't know.
Could be.
An awful lot of legislators and representatives this year have hidden from their constituents. We're talking to Julie Johnson. She is running for Texas House District number
115,
which is the northwest corner of Dallas County. You're so far unopposed in the primary, in the Democratic primary.
That's correct. I am the only Democrat that has filed to date. So.
And you can file, Patty, until
the 11th.
Right. Filing's open until December.
So we have about another week.
Right.
This is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Julie Johnson's our guest, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
This is Rollins Gilliland, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
And this Saturday is the third annual Canowen Toy Drive. Canowen is collecting toys for Scottish Rite Hospital for Children. Toys can be dropped at the Canowen Studios at 11311 North Central Expressway, at Top 10 Records at 338 West Jefferson Boulevard in Oak Cliff, and Sons of Herman Hall at 3414 Elm Street in Dallas, in Deep Ellum. Canowen Toy Drive party and open house takes place this Saturday, December 9th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Free tacos from Taco Deli, music from Ernie Johnson, Laceth performing a tribute to Selena, Pastor Bernita Scott, Joe Pat Hennen, Greg A. Smith, and J-Mac, Intensifies Sunlight Choir, Twang Liner Mesquite Mustangs, Cheerleading Squad, How To, Louis the Great, Lil Ant and Baby B, DJ Deuce, and DJ Charlie Don't Park. Santa will be there at noon. You can bring your kids. Free hot chocolate. Don't miss it. KNON DJs will be there, too. Patty will be there. She'll be a little bit late. She'll be here on Sunday, but she'll be there. This is a free event, and for more information, go to KNON.org. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Julie Johnson. She is running for House District 115 against Matt Rinaldi, the author of The Bathroom Bill, which we have talked about ad nauseum on this show over the last 12 months.
And I just want to say kudos to you for reading that big long list of performers.
Thank you. And that was the first time I saw it. Josh handed it to me and said, here, this has to, and it says, yes, read this on the air.
Before the break, we found out that Julie is a mom, amongst many other things. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your background and what prompted you to run.
I'm a lawyer. I've been an attorney here in Dallas for 28 years. I have my own firm. I've had my own firm now since 1995. I love being an attorney. I love representing people, and I have a wonderful staff.
So wait a minute. So we actually have somebody who's running who knows about the law. Yay!
Yes, we do.
That's important.
And, right. And so it's great. I love being a lawyer. I've been... I think my background in the law has certainly positioned me well for this. I've had a career of being an advocate and a voice for people who have been wronged, who need change, who need justice, and working really hard to achieve that. So there's that. I am married. I'm a wife. My spouse is Susan Moster. She's a gastroenterologist. And so... we've been married and are very, very happy. I have two sons, Benjamin and Nicholas, and they are freshmen in high school and a senior in high school. And we're nice. Going through all what parents do, trying to figure out where Nicholas is going to go to college next year and doing all that. And Benjamin loves to play football, and we go and cheer him on. And, you know, I'm a mama, I'm a lawyer, I'm an activist. But what got me to run was... really, I think just what's happening is you know, I read somewhere, you know, we woke up, stay woke, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that's certainly what happened to me. You know, I've been involved in Democratic politics for many years, basically as a fundraiser and supporting other people that have run, helping raise money to fund their campaigns and to give them the resources necessary to win. And this time, you know, I was in Washington, and I was supposed to watch Hillary become president. And I didn't see that. Instead, I went to one of the most powerful events of my life, which was the Women's March. And I took my sons, my sister came, and we were there, and it was awesome just to be with that million-plus group of people finding their voice, finding their passion, saying, this is insane. What could I have done more? I could have done this. Maybe I should have voted. Maybe this. You know, this collective energy of people finding their outrage, finding their voice that we must change. We must be better. And I think that certainly ignited in me an opportunity and a desire to take another step myself. For some people, it's taking that first step of voting. For some people, it's taking the first step to write a check to a political candidate or block walking or doing voter turnout. Well, I had done all of those things. So for me, the next step was become a candidate. And so that's what I've done.
And awesome. You're one of so many women just in Dallas County. Mm-hmm. But if you look across the country, but what was the stat, I believe, from Emily's list or Annie's list, one of those, that was just an amazing number of women have stepped up like you.
I went and met with Emily's list in Washington, and they shared with me the statistic that I found just amazing. They said that they had 900 women running in different races across the country in the 2016 cycle. And in this cycle, they have 10,000.
Wow.
So that was just huge. That statistic alone shows the waking up of women, that with all the indivisible groups, you know, and I've met so many amazing women who are involved in politics for the first time, mm-hmm. in these indivisible groups in particular. They have never been involved in a campaign before now and in this last 12 months. We have a pulse and an energy that is running in this country, that is running in Dallas. That we saw in Virginia. No one had expected that, and that is certainly true here. I have sensed there is a sense of urgency. There is a sense of passion. These women are rising up, and they're saying, no, we are not going to take this anymore, and it is so exciting.
The other group that got energized, though, was the LGBT community.
Oh, yes.
With what's her name, Danica Rome, who won in Virginia against the chief homophobe, who proudly campaigned on that
misgendered
title.
Her throughout the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Two transgender people elected to the Minneapolis City Council.
This week, we didn't mention this. Seattle just elected their first gay mayor.
And last week we did mention this. There was a special election in Oklahoma in a race that had been, it's an Oklahoma state Senate seat that has been Republican for years. 2 years ago, a year ago when that race came up, the Democratic Party poured $200,000 into the race. This time for the special election, Democratic Party did nothing. A 26-year-old lesbian got all of her friends together. They knocked on doors, and she won by 31 votes in a Republican district. You know, so good for her.
It can be done.
Well, they voted for her because she got out there and people learned who she was. Just in this area, and I don't know if I have a complete list. Julie, in addition to you, Jessica Gonzalez is running against Roberto Alonso in the primary. Mm-hmm. Finn Jones, who is transgender, is running in the District 114 race, I think it is, or 94th district race. Doesn't matter what the number is. Against Tony Tenderholt, who's this right-wing extremist in the legislature.
He pals around with Meraldi.
My favorite thing about him is he's a family values Republican on his fifth wife, who they, I can't remember the story because it was when he was first elected like three terms ago, but I did a story about the Family Values Republican and his Playboy Bunny wife, fifth wife, and this party that they had that was so inappropriate. Anyway, Finn Jones running, very qualified also. For Congress, John Duncan is running against, well, he was going to run against Joe Barton. And Lori Birch running for the seat that's vacated by Sam Johnson. There are a couple of people running in that race. John has a lot of people running in his race, so he has a lot of work to do before the primary. I called John after Joe Barton's picture, nude picture, came out this week or last week. You know, I said to him, John, I like to be an even-handed reporter. We printed Joe Barton's naked picture. Would you like to send me one? So far, he's declined.
I'm sure. I'm sure. There's also a lesbian Latina running in the valley. There's a long, extended congressional district that goes all the way to El Paso, and she's running against Will Hurd. Tina Ortiz.
Right.
Plus, we have Celia Israel and Mary Gonzalez already in the legislature, so we could have a real caucus there.
Wouldn't that be great?
Uh-huh.
That'd be very exciting.
But it's interesting that a number of LGBT people have been energized to run in races against some of the worst of the worst. I'd love a lesbian to win against the person who wrote the bathroom bill.
Well, you know, we have to find our own voice.
Mm-hmm.
We can't always expect for people outside of our community to be the voices for us.
Mm-hmm. So
and,
true.
You know, we have to find our own voice. And that's true for everyone. You have to find your own voice. You have to speak your own truth. And then it's persuasive. It's compassionate. It's people embrace you for that when you're living your authentic self. And so I personally believe that, you know, our community had a big win when we were able to defeat the bathroom bill this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Because 5 years ago, we would never have won that. And
right.
So the fact that we won is a huge victory to the LGBTQ community. And the fact that we had such strong support from the business community who recognizes our value and everything that we can contribute and how what wonderful members of society we are and how discrimination against us is just completely unacceptable. And so, but that those lessons can be learned across the board for everyone, but it comes back to the same thing we were just talking about, which is this is the year of people finding their voice. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing. I'm finding mine.
You know, talking about the business community, the CEO of American Airlines and Southwest Airlines and a whole long list of companies went down to Austin, wasted their time, and it was a waste of their time because they shouldn't have had to do it, but it was important for them to do. They testified against the bathroom bill. Are these same companies going to turn around now and support the same Republicans who pushed these bills?
I certainly hope not. You know, we are absolutely going to reach out to them and hope to garner their support in my race for sure. But I think that the business community has learned a lot from that experience. And I hope that they are evaluating who the best candidate is to support that promotes pro-business in Texas, which includes when you have pro-business in Texas, that means having the opportunity to hire the best and the brightest from the entire work pool, not from a narrow pool. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you can open it up, the competition rises to the top and businesses have the best to choose from. And I think businesses realize that, and to have open and inclusive policies is the kind of business community that the state of Texas needs.
And you've been really active in that for many, many years. I can remember in the early 2000s and such, you were on like the National Business Council for the Human Rights Campaign, or involved in being a governor and then a director. And helping to
a human rights campaign governor, not a state of Texas governor.
Right.
But probably the thing I did that was the most important during my time on the HRC board was I co-chaired the effort to defeat the federal marriage amendment that was offered in 2004. And Bruce Bashan and I were co-chairs of that, and I traveled all over the country and helped raise millions and millions of dollars to defeat that. Had we not been successful in that effort to defeat that horrible bill, we may not have legal marriage today. And so I'm very proud of that work. And I'm very proud of the advocacy that I was a part of and the fundraising and the mobilization of our community and the business community around that to defeat that bill, because that was a huge moment. Sometimes we have to not only look at the bills that we do pass as successes, but we also have to look at the bills that don't get passed as successes. And that's one in 2004 by defeating the Federal Marriage Amendment. That was a big step in paving the way for marriage equality that we have today.
Absolutely. And it was a really important moment at the time, because that with the Republican Party at that time was using us. They were using animus against our community to win votes. And it was hateful and tragic at the same time. That's
a lot of people think that's what got George Bush elected the first time.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And it passed in 11 states mm-hmm. during that mm-hmm. same election.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But it's a way that, you know, they leverage a minority and leverage hatred against a minority, not unlike Matt Rinaldi did on the floor of the House.
Well, speaking of Matt Rinaldi, we had a caller, and he said, wasn't Matt Rinaldi, she said, Josh's the one who took the call. She said, wasn't Matt Rinaldi the one who threatened to shoot another legislator and to call ICE on protesters?
He did.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, he did.
Did not know that.
Protesters in the gallery for SB4.
Right. So in the SB4 bill.
Thank you, caller.
Yes.
For that reminder.
Yes. In the SB4 bill, when the protesters were down there exercising their constitutional rights to share have their voice and let their opinions be heard, his decision was, rather than to listen to them in a compassionate way, his own constituents, his choice was to call ICE on them because, you know, if they were protesting this bill, then they must have been here illegally. You know, there's no way that, you know, reasonable people would protest this bill in his mind, right? It's just so offensive.
You know, and I like that you said listen, because one of the smartest legislators who's ever been in the legislature, Harriet Earhart, was on our show one time, and she said, you know, the best legislation we ever wrote were laws that came from our listening to both sides, because they help more people. When they got my ideas and ideas from the other side, we put them together, and it was better legislation.
Right. You know, when you act, listening is, it's becoming a lost art, it mm-hmm. seems like. That's what I have to do in my business all the time. It's what I have to do as a parent, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But it's what we all need to do more of, is listen. And I think when we do, we realize the commonness of our humanity. And we realize the commonness of all of our goals. Mm-hmm. I don't know anyone that doesn't want a good, safe place to live, that doesn't want financial security, that doesn't want a good education for their kids, that doesn't want access to good doctors mm-hmm. and health care and just
clean water and air
and pothole-free roads, you know, and you know, just the functions of government that we're supposed to do. Everyone wants that. We have so much in our commonness there. So, you know, I think listening is very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Patty, you were going to ask something.
Oh, I was just going to say, I thought that whole episode with Rinaldi was just indicative of the meaning of SB4. Because one of the things that many people are very upset about in this state, with good reason, and it upsets me terribly, is that it's sort of a license to profile, mm-hmm. to do racial profiling in our state. And here, Rinaldi said he had called ICE on protesters in the gallery because they were brown, mm-hmm. not because he knew that they were not in this country legally or not. He didn't care. They were brown. And so he called ICE.
You know, which is amazing, given the fact that in House District 115, the district that he represents, it has the single most diverse zip code of any zip code in the entire country.
In the entire United States.
In the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yes,
here.
We have
in House District 115.
That.
And, he can't seem to listen to his constituents that he represents. It's astounding to me.
Frank Joseph, who does the show before us, he teaches in the Irving School District, and they teach in something like almost 100 different languages in Irving ISD, something like that. It's amazing how diverse Irving is. And I guess partially it's because it's right near the airport. I don't know.
I don't know why it is. I just know that it is. And it's very exciting to me. It's very exciting to me to have the opportunity to represent such diversity. I think it's great. It represents the full fabric of our country, and it represents what our immigration laws need to be, welcoming everyone. And I'm excited to have the opportunity to do that.
We are talking to the diverse Julie Johnson. She is running for, yeah, my segues are right on usually, right?
And Candy Markham notes them every
time. Yes, she does. Julie Johnson is running for Texas House District 115. She's running against Matt Rinaldi. So far doesn't have an opponent in the Democratic primary, but if you do, so you'll deal with that.
Yes, we will. But, you know, right now I'm concentrating on reaching out to the voters, reaching out to the constituents of House District 115, and we're being met with open arms and great success, so I'm really thrilled.
And we'll be back with more with Julie right after this.
Hi, this is Valletta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis. Our guest is Julie Johnson. She is running for House District 115, which is the northwest corner of Dallas County, mostly not Dallas. It includes Addison, Coppell, Farmers Branch, Carrollton, but only in Dallas County.
And West Irving.
And a little bit of Irving, right. But only in Dallas County. So if you're in Carrollton in Denton County, that's not
Eastern.
It's a different.
Okay.
Yeah, Eastern. Well, it goes all the way to the airport, though. So kind of northern Irving. We're deciding
right.
What
yes,
it is. So northern right. Irving goes all the way to the airport. So if elected, she'll represent a whole bunch of airplanes. They'll fly through her district.
I want to go back to this district in zip code 75038, which is the most diverse zip code in the entire United States.
And we're talking about racial diversity, correct?
Right.
Everything.
Okay.
Everything right. Diversity.
As of 2012, that district or that zip code was 26% Asian, 25% Black, 23% Hispanic, and just 23% White. You'd never know that by what we see from Matt Rinaldi. But you've been out and about. What do you think of the district? What do you think of all that diversity?
Oh, I think it's exciting. You know, I think it represents the America that we are and also the America that we can be. You know, it's just so exciting. There's just all kinds of interesting communities and just people living their life. You know, that's what it's about. And I think it shows so many of the things that we have in common. And I'm so excited about that. I think having the opportunity to meet such different people from different backgrounds and learn from the differences, but also unite in our commonality is something that more of our government leaders need to do.
You know, and you asked, is it racial diversity? Yes, it's extremely racially diverse, but it's also diverse in language.
Like, and religion.
And religion. It's one of the highest Muslim populations in the country. 100 different languages spoken. It's everything diversity.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you've been going around, you know, talking to folks, have you noticed that there are a sizable LGBT population out there?
You know, I haven't really seen a significant population of LGBT folks out in the district. I know... obviously, we're everywhere.
We are.
And I certainly have met different folks in the district, but not the sizable population that we see maybe more down in the Oakland area here in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not everywhere. Some of us are afraid to go outside LBJ.
And you know, and you know, we live, Aaron and I live over in east of the White Rock Lake, and there's a whole chunk in there of Lake Highlands and Old Lake Highlands that is counted as the eighth largest neighborhood for lesbians in the country.
Hmm.
You know, we have probably 35, 40 households in my precinct alone that I know are LGBT. And so I imagine you've got quite a number in your district. You just haven't had that conversation with them yet.
Well, it's just like what we know about what we just generally know is that LGBT people are of every race, we're of every gender, we're of every national origin,
we're everywhere, every religion,
yep. We're everywhere.
Except where I live. I live in Oaklawn, and I don't know any gay neighbors. All of my neighbors are medical students, actually. The building I live in is, again, it's extremely diverse.
Very.
Huge Asian population in our building. So when they put up signs, they put them up in Chinese and Korean. And
see, I like to think of it as more of the Canadian model. You know, here we talk about the melting pot where everybody just, you know, folds in and we're, you know, homogenous and we're sort of the same thing. We all become American and we look alike. The whole melting pot thing. And Canada likes to tout themselves as the salad. So together we taste great. We're awesome. But everybody still maintains their own individuality, right, and their own.
Well, but you know what I do in our building? Some Asian cultures keep very much to themselves. They're not sure that, you know, they're with these crazy Americans. How are you supposed to act? And I say hello to every single one of them. I just smile and say hi. And do you know who catches on to that first? The little 2-year-old kids. So.
See, it's the universality of 2-year-old kids. You know, when the 2-year-olds meet each other, it's just it's a great moment of recognition, like somebody my size.
Immediately.
That's the way we should all be when we're, you know, 62.
That is so true. 62.
Speaking of the way we should all be, the Republicans passed a tax bill this weekend.
Isn't that terrible? You know, on Friday night, after 1 hour of distributing the bill and their handwriting notes in the margins, not giving full debate, not making it. The tax policy of this country is one of the most important policies that the federal government does. It affects absolutely everyone. And to not have that bill see the light of day through appropriate hearings and the appropriate process and the appropriate time for, you know, comments and input by the public is just unconscionable to me.
Well, it doesn't affect everybody. If you make enough money, you don't pay any taxes.
Well, it does affect everybody, though.
It does. You know, it's... And the thing about it that makes me, the one, there's so many things that make me upset.
Because that's a lot of it.
But the one thing in particular that stands out to me that I find just incredible and jaw-dropping is the fact that they've taken away the $250 tax credit from our teachers.
Mm-hmm.
I just find that punitive, mean-spirited, and I cannot for the life of me figure out the motivation behind
that. What was the $250 for?
Oh, it's for when they buy school supplies for their classrooms.
Yeah.
Because they're so underfunded, they don't have the resources necessary to provide, you know, construction paper or whatnot. And so teachers, I mean, they work so hard for our young people, and they pull money out of their pocket, and they had this one $250 tax deduction. And why was that the one that the Republicans chose to eliminate? But you know, I'm sure they're really pleased to announce that they can have a deduction for their private planes.
Yes, and maintenance on those planes.
But, you know, the teachers, you know, they can't keep their $250 that they spend educating our young people.
Well,
that's
so, Laurent, in that case, you lose your $250 that Danny was able to take.
Uh-huh. And we look forward to that little $250.
But you'll be able to deduct your plane.
That's true.
Once
they get a plane.
I just thought it was a criminal, if not worse, that the Democratic members of the United States Senate didn't even receive the bill until hours before the planned midnight vote, you know, in the middle of the night. And here they are scrambling to read 500 pages, a lot of it handwritten in the margins, as you mentioned, Julie. And it affects everybody, and it was just like slipshod, pushed through. And I just hope and pray that the conference, the chamber conference between the conference committee between the House and the Senate cannot resolve their differences. Mm-hmm. I would love to see that they can't come to the middle.
Do you know what some of the differences are? I mean, this bill has not been published. It hasn't been debated. It wasn't debated in Congress, but certainly the public hasn't debated it at all and had input, because you know what? Sometimes good ideas come from the public too.
We didn't get to see it. I mean, we didn't get to see
it. Well, that's what I'm saying. So do we know some of the things that this does? I know the corporate tax rate goes from 35% down to 20%.
Well, Susan Collins,
the main thing there,
a senator from Maine who's been with us on many, many issues, she's put a make or break in the bill that said keep the state income tax deduction or I won't vote for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's right. in the Senate bill, but it's not in the House bill. So what's going to happen when the House wants to say, no, we're getting rid of that? You know,
well, the state tax deduction, the mortgage interest deduction, the That's student loan deduction.
Yes.
You know, I mean, good Lord, this is not economic equality at all, right? This
you know, the student loan deduction doesn't surprise me. I went to see Donald Trump Jr., long story, but I went to see Donald Trump Jr. when he was here in Dallas, and it is part of the Trump agenda, and I think the broader Republican Party. Everybody doesn't need to go to college. College is bad. You get stupid degrees in basket weaving. That's his words. And students need to, except here in Texas where they teach you real subjects. Again, his words. And they're just against college. So that one didn't surprise me at all. I'm not saying I support that. I'm saying it didn't surprise me. They have this thing about college. It has to do with the more educated you are, the more likely you are to vote liberal.
Well, and I just think that, again, we've talked about education this entire, you know, this keeps coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The right to get an education is fundamental. Yeah. And when you are... you've come from an economically disadvantaged family. You're working hard. You're going to public school. You're trying to get your education. That student loan tax deduction means the world. Mm-hmm. Also, then you're a young person. You're trying to start your family, and you're trying to buy a house. And home ownership is a sign of stability. It's a thing that creates. Just that stability within our people and in your family structure to buy a home, and now you're not going to be able to deduct your mortgage interest, and you're not going to be able to deduct your property taxes, and then you have to pay taxes on the expenses that you're paying. But yet our corporations are getting to write off all kinds of expenses, and then their rates are going down, but our rates are going are going up because we're not able to deduct all these things. And I think it's going to stifle home ownership. It's going to stifle the stability of the family. I think it's terrible. I really do.
And I think it's not unlike what we saw in the 80s with Reaganomics. Mm-hmm. You know, this trickle down, you know, I have no expletive that I can say on the air for that. But it's the trickle down thing. And we all remember what happened there. We had a huge recession. You know, the economy.
But they learned at that point. And they stopped doing it.
No, they don't learn. This is exactly the same sort of thing.
I'm saying Reagan and his administration learned, and they stopped doing it. We went through that recession, but by the time he was going out of office, they weren't doing that anymore, so the economy was okay.
I don't remember that.
That tax cut for the rich, that was early in his administration. I'm not saying he was a great president. I'm saying
I think
they
the
learned
effects of that have been here all along.
Completely.
It's not over. It's never been over. It's there, and it's they're doing it entrenched now in our society. And how we ever undo the damage this is going to cause, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just hope and pray it doesn't pass.
Well, yeah, you know, I just firmly believe that we need to have the opportunities for our young people to go to college, mm-hmm. and to pay for it, and to I think that tax deduction for student loan interest is significant. When you're just starting out, you're at the bottom of the pay scale, mm-hmm. your loans are due. And, you know, how are you going to take care of that? And that is a significant issue that needs to be addressed, because, it goes back to when we have an educated society, we all benefit. Our business community benefits. These young people will grow up and form their own businesses, create the next Lord knows, whatever technological device that we'll all have to struggle to figure out, you know, and expand our society forward. We achieve those goals by educating our young people and making that possible.
We had a question. Is there any chance that these tax deductions can be saved?
Well, the bill's not final. It hasn't been signed into law. And so, you know, I think we need to scream and yell as people. We need to do what happened when they were trying to stop the Affordable Care Act and just make it relentless pressure on our representatives in D.C. to have a fair and balanced tax policy. And this bill is not that.
We need all of us, if you don't already, need to have those numbers in your cell phone so you can be at the ready and just keep calling. You know, just keep calling. Mm-hmm. Think of every telemarketer who's ever interrupted your day and direct channel that anger when you press send on calling your representative and your senator. You know, that's we've got to call.
Well, the thing too about this is that's so upsetting to me is just the complete disregard for open process. You know, process matters because it makes, you know, regardless of outcome sometimes, if you've had a fair process and all the voices could be heard, you conduct hearings, you do it in the normal order, it's the result is something that the public can accept more readily than when it's rushed through on a Friday night late on an hour with no notice and a complete disregard for all appropriate process. It makes it just that much more intolerable to stand.
I agree.
Next week is going to be the Roy Moore election in Alabama. Is it, what day is the election? 12th. Saturday?
December 12th.
Is that Saturday?
I have no idea.
It's Tuesday.
Okay, so it's a week from Tuesday.
Right.
Okay, so we're talking politics today. So let's just do this. Next week is teddy bears. What do you think the chances are of the Democrat actually winning, Julie?
It's hard to know. You know, I grew up in Alabama. I'm from Auburn, so I've spent a lot of time there, and I know a lot of people there. And, you know, it is a conservative state. I read somewhere that had women only voted in the last presidential election, Alabama is the only state that would have still gone for Trump.
Really?
Wow.
And yeah.
Wow.
And so that just tells you a lot about how conservative the state is. Having said that, you know, there are a lot of reasonable, fair, open-minded, good, moral people who are completely horrified by Roy Moore and him and what he stands for. Hopefully they will vote for Doug Jones. He's an honorable man. I've met him. He will be a great senator, and I really hope that the people of Alabama see that and vote for people over politics, which is one of the themes of my own campaign. We need to start doing that, voting for the people and putting our political ideologies to the side and vote for good quality people, and then we'll bring our government, our governance, back to where it needs to be.
Julie Johnson, thank you very much for being
thank
with
you.
Us. We
it
are
my
out
absolute,
of time.
Come back. My absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Next week are Joe and Jason. They started the Teddy Bear Party, and we'll talk teddy bears.
One more thing, though. My website, Julie Johnson for Texas. Please come visit. We'd love to have everyone volunteer. We need everybody to contribute, help in any way we can. This is going to be a group effort, taking down someone like Matt Rinaldi, and I need everyone's help, and it would be most appreciated. So thank you so much.
Thanks. And we'll see you next week.